I would like to welcome everyone to our fourth session in this journey of self-discovery, the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. Yesterday, we were discussing about the difference between God and the demigods, or between Bhagavan and the devatas. And we were discussing about the motives of those who approach. But the advantage is at least that by approaching any of the devatas who are obedient servants of the Supreme Lord, actually indirectly we are approaching them. Just like if you approach a police constable, indirectly you're approaching the government. But suppose if a constable and the IGP come together, if the Inspector General of Police and a constable come together and you have one garland, if you garland the constable, you are embarrassing the constable and offending the higher authority. But if you are garlanding the IGP, automatically the constable is satisfied because the boss is happy. So similarly, yatha taror moola nishechanena tripyanti taskanda bhujopashakha pranopahara chethindriyanam tathaiva sarvarhanam achyutejya. It is said, just like by watering the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished. The branches, the sub-branches, the leaves, the flowers, the fruits. Without making a separate endeavor. Just as by watering or by putting food into the belly, every cell of the body is nourished automatically without making a separate endeavor. All the senses are nourished. Similarly, yasmin tushte jagat tushtam. By satisfying the Supreme, automatically all the other 33 crore devatas, they are all satisfied. Even we have not been able to fulfill our responsibility towards some of them, unknowingly or knowingly, all of that is taken care of. In this regard, in the Mahabharata, there is a beautiful incident. How when the Pandavas were sent to the forest by the ill strategies developed by Duryodhana and party, in spite of sending them to the forest, he wanted to see them suffering more. That's the nature of envy in this world. So he sent a rishi who was known for getting angry. So he was, that is Durvas Muni. Durvasa is known for getting angry, very easily pleased and very easily angered. And Duryodhan specifically pleased him. And Durvasa asked for a blessing. He said, please go to my cousins who are living in the forest and give them your mercy. But he put a condition. He said, please go in the late afternoon when Draupadi has eaten. Because by the mercy of sun god, Yudhishthir had received a pot called Akshay Patra, which had the unique quality of feeding any amount of people. Any amount. As long as Draupadi would not eat. Once Draupadi would eat, then it would give produce food only on the next day. And so afternoon, after feeding everyone, after feeding her husbands, then she had taken, and then they were just kind of relaxing. And then suddenly Durvas Muni comes. And then he says, so Yudhishthir offered, and he came with 60,000 disciples. Imagine a guest comes to your home just after you have finished your lunch and 20 people walk in. Tremendous anxiety for the lady of the house. 20,000 sannyasis, all renunciates. And atop it all, this fellow is very angry. Anytime he gets angry. So at that time, she communicates. Yudhishthir says, please go take bath and come. We will have our food ready. And he goes. And tremendous anxiety. And he says, Draupadi, so what nonsense? How can I feed? I've eaten. There's not a grain left at home. And they are in tremendous anxiety. And, well, Draupadi had good experience. When in trouble, just raise your hand. Din bandhu, dinanath, meri dori tere haath. She had been helped before. A miracle had been performed and she was completely helpless. So she raised her hand and she was crying and praying to the Lord, please Krishna, help us. And sure enough, there was a knock on the door. And lo and behold, it was Krishna. She was extremely happy. And before she could speak something, Krishna said, Krishna, her name was also Krishna, said, hey Krishna, before you say anything, I'm very hungry, please feed me. Sometimes Krishna is really testing. He says, please feed me. Draupadi completely broke down. She said, my Lord, if all Durvasa Muni along with his 60,000 disciples, if somehow I am not able to feed and they curse me and go away, I don't care. But you, my worshipable Lord, you have come. She was a princess. Please try to understand. She was a princess. She had never known scarcity in her life. And you have come, and not only that you have come, you are personally asking for food. We don't have even a grain in our house to provide you. Shame on us. And then she just broke down, as any woman in her position would do. Krishna said, get me the pot. And he looked in, and there was just one grain somewhere sticking there. And he took it and he belched and he said, I'm completely satisfied. And it is described, as he ate that one grain, all Durvasa Muni along with the 60,000 disciples who were taking bath in the river nearby, they started belching out fully till the neck. And immediately Durvasa told the others, do you feel the same way I feel? They said, yes, yes, Gurudev. And then he said, I think we immediately leave from here. Because Yudhishthir is known to feed sumptuously. And if you don't eat at his place, it will be a big offense. So without showing their face, just turned around and left. The lesson from this story, beautiful incident in the Mahabharata, is Yasmin Tushte Jagat Tushtam. By satisfying this one person, the whole universe can be satisfied. If you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished. If you put food to the belly, every cell of the body is nourished. Similarly, if we satisfy the Supreme Lord, then automatically all his representatives, all his limbs, all his expansions in the form of devatas and other living entities, they're satisfied. Anyway, that was the discussion yesterday. So, why did we want to find out God? Because we want to solve our problems, right? Birth, old age, disease, death, misery is caused by body and mind, misery is caused by other living entities, misery is caused by natural disturbances. So we want to find out who created this place, so that we can catch him and ask him, kya tune dunya banai? Right? And now we have found out, at least according to the Vedic essence of Vedic scriptures, that the Bhagavad Gita, that personality is none other than the speaker of the Gita, Lord Shri Krishna. The next question that arises is, all right, I know who the cause of all causes is, but the next relevant and immediate question is, who am I? And what is my relationship with my source? Because unless you know who you are in relationship with the absolute truth or the source, how will we know what our function is? Just like if you go to an organization and the organization tell you that they have employed you. Okay, you have employed me. Tell me who I am. Am I the CEO? Am I the financial executive? Am I the salesperson? Am I the production manager? Who am I? Because unless you know who you are in relationship with the organization, what will you do? How will you know what your function is? Therefore, the next natural question is, all right, I have understood. Theoretically, let us assume that Gita says that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cause of all, cause of the source of everything. Now, who am I? Now, so that is the discussion that we will be taking today. So according to the Bhagavad Gita, according to the Vedic literatures, the identity of the self is that we are not this temporary body, but we are the eternal soul within, the spirit soul. Now, the body that we see of each other is temporary, it is material, and eventually it has to die. But the self, the real self, which activates the body, and the absence of which makes the body absolutely lifeless and dead, is eternal, full of knowledge and blissful. That doesn't die. With the death of the body, the soul, the living spark within the body, which actually activates the body, doesn't die. It doesn't matter whether your lifespan is that of a microbe, which is few seconds or few hours. There are some insects, some living entities, which live only for few hours. And there are some living entities which live for billions of years. In the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the lifespan of Lord Brahma, the first created being of this universe, is given. Sahasra yuga paryantam aharyat brahmano vidu. He says, Sahasra yuga. Now, the life, yesterday we were discussing, the current age that we are living is called Kali Yuga. And the duration of this age is 4,32,000 years, of which only 5,000 years we have passed. That means 4,27,000 left. This is the duration of Kali Yuga. Before that was Dwapar Yuga, which is two times Kali Yuga, that means 8,64,000. Before that was Treta Yuga, which was three times, that means 12,96,000. And prior to that was Satyuga, the Golden Age. And that's its duration was four times Kali Yuga, which means 17,28,000. There are four cycles, Sat, Treta, Dwapar, Kali. At the end of Kali again, Sat, Treta, Dwapar. It's like a cycle. So one cycle consists of four yugas. So 17,28,000, 12,96,000, 8,64,000, 4,32,000. It's one cycle. That is 43,20,000 years. This is one yuga cycle. And it is described when this repeats 1,000 times, that means 43,20,000 into 1,000 is one day of Brahma. Ahar. Ahar means day. That means 12 hours. And similarly is the night of Brahma. Ratri Yuga Sahasrantam Teho Ratra Vidojana. That means 43,20,000 into 2 into 1,000. This is the duration of Brahma's one day. But compared to eternity, and Brahma lives for his 100 years. His month is 30 days, his week is 7 days, and he lives for his 100 years. 311 trillion and some billion years. But compared to eternity, Brahma's life is like blink of an eye. It just goes off like that. We don't realize, isn't it? Suddenly somebody calls, you know, one time I was in traveling by train and somebody, young man, he said, "Uncle, thoda side mein ho jao." I got a shock. "Uncle? Main?" Recently I went to my home and my elder brother's daughter has given birth to a beautiful child. And she said, "Look at, grandpa has come." Too much for my ego. I look in the mirror, I feel, you know, like I'm just still feel I'm 16 year old. Though of course body doesn't support the same system now anymore. I feel like that, and then suddenly said, "Look, grandpa has come." I said, "Grandpa? Who's the grandpa? Which grandpa?" Time flies like that before we know. And before we know, we'll be a picture on the wall. There's the nature of this world. Flies like that, we don't realize. So in spite of the fact that we may have an extremely long lifespan, but from the point of eternity, it's all like a bubble in the ocean, lasting for a few seconds before it bursts. So this is the first lesson that the Gita teaches, right? In chapter 2, after Arjuna's lamentation, Krishna begins to speak. The first lesson he says is, "You are not the body, temporary material body, but you are the eternal spirit soul." Now, as we were discussing the other day, we can't speak of anything unless we have some proof. If you really want to be scientific and logical, you have to have some proof. What is the proof that we are not the body, we are the soul? Who has seen it? So the first thing is common sense, which is uncommonly found. If someone dies, what do we say? Guzar gaye. Phalana vyakti guzar gaye. He has passed away. Who has passed away? Think about it. Who has passed away? Every cell of the body is there. That person is lying. So who has passed away? What is it that was making the body live and breathe and see and touch and hear and taste and smell? And what is it, the absence of which makes the body totally dead, absolutely degenerating within no time? I remember when I was in high school, I went to my aunt's house, and 3 days later, my uncle passed away. And they were the only, my uncle and auntie were the only people when I visited them. And her children were, you know, spread all over, you know, someone was overseas and all that. And I had to communicate the news to them. And the body had to be preserved till the sun came. So that night, my aunt requested, you be here until everything is done. And he was kept in a room, the bedroom. And I got the ice because, you know, it had, we didn't know it may take 2 days, 3 days. So we had to put him on the cube ice, big, you know, box-like thing. And he was made to lie on that. And at night, my aunt requested, you sleep in the same room. Because somebody has to be there, you know, when the water comes or something happens. And I said, I think you stay. No, 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 you stay, because you are a male, you stay. And she slept in the other room. And I was in probably 9th or 10th standard, 16, 17 years, that means. I just couldn't sleep. I was just looking at him. I didn't put off the light also. I just couldn't sleep. I was just looking at him. What if he gets up? What if he starts moving and gets up? You know, because I've seen some Bollywood movies, you know. And then suddenly, an hour later, I started thinking, what am I thinking? Am I scared that my uncle will get up? I was brought up on his lap. I loved him. Why am I so scared that he's going to get up now? What is it? The presence of which makes that person so loving, so worshipable. Oh, I can't live without you. And what is it? The absence of which makes that person so obnoxious and abominable. You want to get rid as early as possible. Put fire in the mouth. Dig in the ground and put him in. Would we ever do it when the person is alive? Common sense. Uncommonly found. These realization unfortunately lasts only till the graveyard. It is called Smashana Vairagya. Suddenly you start thinking, what is life? Kya hai ye jeevan? And as soon as they come out, take cigarette, okay, vapas, back to job. Back to square one. Isn't it something worth thinking? So who am I? The body is there, every limb of the body is there, the heart is there, the brain is there, every cell of the body is there. Who is it who has left? That means we have never seen the person, the real person. What was it which was making the body move, speak, act, think? And what was it? The absence of which makes this body totally useless. Secondly, intuitive understanding. It's very interesting. Without our knowledge, the language that we use, referring to ourselves, indicates that we are not the body. What is the proof? For example, I say, this is my shawl, this is my dhoti, this is my kurta. I don't say, I shawl, I dhoti, I kurta. That means, the shawl, this dhoti, this kurta belongs to me. I am not this, but it belongs to me. Similarly, we say, my hand, my leg, my head, my ears. I don't say I ear, I head. That means my body, right? We say my body, which means that this body belongs to me. Who am I? This is my leg, this is my. If you say this is my computer, this is my watch, this is my table, that means it belongs to me. Who am I? So if you see, even intuitively, we are using terminology or pronouns which indicates that this belongs to me, the body belongs to me, that means I am different from the body. Little more if you move ahead regarding claiming the proofs. What is the proof of the existence of the soul. The soul's nature is consciousness. Wherever you see consciousness, you must know that there is the presence of the soul. Wherever you see consciousness, it may be very much developed or very much covered. But wherever you see consciousness, we must know that there is existence of soul. One time I was giving a lecture in a medical college and I was talking about what was the title? Life After Death, Fact or Fiction. That was the title. So, Reincarnation, Fact or Fiction. That was the title. And while I was speaking, it was in medical college, and one boy stood up and, you know, and everyone was looking at it, and generally, you know, wanting to impress the girls also in the audience, he looked at it and said, "Excuse me, Swamiji, I have a question." I said, "Yes." "Can you show me the soul?" "Can you show me? Otherwise, I don't believe the soul exists." So I said, "All right, you're a medical student. Do you believe mind exists?" Said, "Yes." "No." Show me your mind." "Do you believe there is something called intelligence?" Said, "Yes." "Show me." "Can you show me your mind? Can you show me your intelligence?" Said, no, you can't see it, but you can know by the symptom." I said, "That is it. Something gross can be measured, but something subtler, the subtler the thing is, it is known by the symptom. Air, you can't see the air, but you feel the air. Right? So mind, face is the index of the mind. Right? People say that. They use this phrase. If a person is morose, they say, "Kya yaar, man bahut dukh gaya lagta hai. Man dukha hua." So face is the index of the mind. Symptom. The subtler things can be known by symptom. Intelligence. If the International Medical Association, American Medical Association, and even internationally, the mentally retarded, mentally challenged, we say today, children, they are defined as the ability of the individual to adapt to the environment, the subtleties of the environment. Those who are less intelligent are not able to quickly adapt to a new environment. They take some time. But those who are quick and smart, very intelligent, they quickly see the finer nuances and adapt themselves to the environment. This is how you judge who is intelligent. So there are ways to measure the intelligence, but you can't see intelligence. So the subtler the thing is, it becomes more... it is known only by the symptoms. So similar, I said, as you can't see the mind, as you can't see the intelligence, similarly, subtlest of all is the soul. And what is the proof? The proof is its symptom. And what is the symptom? Consciousness. Wherever you see consciousness, whether it is in animals, whether it is in plants, whether it is in insects, you must know there is a soul. In many parts of the world, in many other scriptures, they don't recognize the existence of the soul, even in animals, what to speak of plants. But it has been scientifically proved that even, forget about animals, even plants have life. Sir Jagadish Chandra Bose, the first Nobel laureate of India from Calcutta, way back in the early 20th century, he received this just to prove, he proved it, that even plants have life. You put poison in the water and put it in the root, they die. You put liquor, they get intoxicated. That's what he showed. So we see that wherever you see symptom of life, you must know the soul exists. That is the nature of this, or the symptom of the soul, that is consciousness. More and more scientific, moving towards that, there are studies called NDE studies, which means near-death experiences. Now, what are these kind of studies? I'll show you in the slideshow the scientists who have studied this. A person dies. After his death, few hours have passed. But after some time, the person comes back to life. And after coming back to life, he starts describing what happened in that surrounding when he was clinically dead. Actually dead for many hours. There are cases where proved that this person is dead. And they have come back to life after some few hours and reported everything that went on within that place, spoke everything, every word that was spoken, everything that happened, as if the person was, it is also called OBE, out of body experience. They expressed that I was outside, I was watching myself, and I was seeing what was happening all around. And this is studied by one person called Dr. Michael Sabom. He has studied over 1,000 cases of near-death experience. He's a heart surgeon. Sometimes people die on the table and then have come back and reported everything that happened. And his studying, after studying so many cases, his conclusion is the mind separate from the body, and it exists even after the death of the body? And is that mind what the spiritualists call as the soul? This is his question. Inconclusive, of course. So this is called near-death experience, where physically the person is dead, but has existed in another realm, come back and reported what happened during the time he was supposed to be dead. Another kind of study, which is very much popular, even in the TV serials many times they show this, is what is called as past life memory. Here, an individual dies, and 2-3 years later, a child born in some other geographical area suddenly starts speaking in a totally different language, full, perfect language of some other tongue, and starts speaking, I am so and so, I want to meet my wife. 3-year-old child, I want to meet my wife, her name is this, I want to meet my child, her name is this, I want to go to my home, this is the address. And the amazing thing is, when the scientists actually took that child to that particular place, that person is able to tell even the most confidential details of the lives of those people whom the child is seeing right now. So much so that all the family members are convinced the kind of intimate details that are given by this child, they are convinced that the person in this body is none other than the person who was in that previous body. These are called past life memories, or what is generally shown in the TV serial as cases of reincarnation. One time in our class, I was giving a lecture, and one boy stood up and he said, his name was Deep Kapadia, and he said, I'm also a case of reincarnation. At least I liked it because it was proof for many of the audience. But I was thinking maybe he's trying to impress the audience or something. He actually next day got newspaper articles about himself. And he said, when I was 3 or 4 years old, I clearly remembered that I was a security officer, chief security officer in a museum in some place in Gujarat, near Ahmedabad or somewhere. It was a huge, some Gaikwad or something. It was a palace of the king. And he was, which had been transformed into a museum, and he was the chief security officer. And when he spoke like that, started speaking like a madman, so the father took him to a psychologist. And the psychologist was studying these kind of things. So they actually took him. He gave the address of the place. And they took him. And he went there and walked as if he knew the place. He just started walking inside, opened the door, went into some inner chambers and showed a painting on the wall. And he said, remove the painting, there is a secret door. So they removed the painting of a big king. They removed the painting and there was a secret door. He opened the door, went inside, and there was a pedestal fan which was run by kerosene, you know, not by electricity. And he said, this is how you should start it. He said, I know every place. I know every inch of this place because I was the chief security officer. Now, can you imagine a child, 3, 3.5 years, leading a group of adults to an absolutely new place which he has never seen in his life, and going and revealing some confidential things which nobody else knew there in the palace. And not only showing, but starting the fan also, how to start it. So such clear-cut evidences studied by scientists, not spiritualists, scientists of impeccable credentials. It's not that sometimes, you know, I say I am a reincarnation of Mr. Birla. Then everyone knows why I'm saying this. then I may claim. No, these are actually studied cases. They ruled out all fabricated stories like that and proved beyond doubt. I'll show you. We have a lot of slides because I went to meet one of these ladies at NIMHANS, National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences at Bangalore. I met this lady who has studied over 350 cases, and I got some slides just to, you know, give authenticity and credentials to my presentation. Kya pata nahi kuch bhi aisa Bhagavad Gita bolta hai. Just to prove it, I liked it, so I got all the slides I want to show you. Another evidence to prove the fact that life exists beyond the material frame is what is called as, studies called as astral body travel, where a person under clinical condition leaves this body, goes to a distant place where he has never visited before, experiences that place, comes back, enters the body, gets up and speaks where he went, what he did, and which is confirmed, which has never gone ever before, and confirmed that the details that he has given is perfectly true. Some yogis have the ability to do that. They leave the body, go to a, sometimes even interplanetary, and then they come back and get up and report exactly what they experienced. So these are some evidences which indicate that life is not simply existence in the body alone, but it can exist even beyond the mortal frame or the physical body. Now, for those who have no faith in the scriptures, We need to get so many logical and scientific evidences. But if we have faith in the scriptures, so much of trouble can be avoided. It is so safer, it is so easier to acquire perfect knowledge if and only we have faith in the scriptures. The Bhagavad Gita, in the very beginning, right at the outset, Krishna describes the nature of the soul elaborately. So much information is given right at the outset. ABC of the Bhagavad Gita. So let's see, what does the Gita say about the characteristics of the soul? It is said, first of all, the soul is indestructible. Matter can be destroyed. Fire can burn it. A bomb can destroy it to shreds. Water can dissolve things. Weapons can cut things. But the Gita says, Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dahati pavakah, nachainam kledayanti apah, na shoshayati marutah. Na enam chindanti shastrani. No weapon can cut the soul to pieces. Na enam dahati pavakah. Pavaka means fire. Dahati means to burn. Na enam dahati pavakah. Any amount of fire, any degree or any duration can touch the soul, or to speak of burn it. Nachainam kledayanti apah. No water, even the strongest acids, can't dissolve the soul. Na shoshayati marutah. Maruta means wind. We find in this world anything, however strong, even the toughest steel, even the huge mountains, Himalayan mountains, become cracked and eventually turns to, you know, sometimes we go to some mountains where heavy sun and then rains, it cracks and, you know, they fall apart. Eventually, of course, after thousands and sometimes tens of thousands of years, it turns to powder. Eventually, however strong and powerful, matter degrades through the influence of material elements. Water, fire, sun, air. But soul is absolutely untouched by any material elements. Never, it cannot even touch it. It is absolutely indestructible. Achedyoyam, adahyoyam, akledyo, shosha evacha, nitya sarvagata sthanur, achaloyam sanatana. This is the first nature of the soul, that it is absolutely indestructible by any means. Even if you put a hydrogen bomb right at the neck of a person, the body can be blown to pieces, but the soul is absolutely untouched. The soul is an individual. The soul in your body is different from my body. The soul in my body is different from his body. And the soul in his body is different from her body. Every individual has a soul. In fact, he's an individual because there is a soul. It is described right at the outset by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita that every living entity, O Arjun, 64 crores of people had gathered on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Natve vaham jatunasam natvam neme janadhipaha nachaivana bhavishyamaha sarve vayamataparam. Arjun, there was not a time that you and me and all the kings here did not exist. Nor in the future shall any of us ever cease to be. Which means we were individuals, we are individuals, we will continue to remain individuals. Even Socrates, a great thinker from the Western world, when he was thought to be a crazy man when he said that nobody can ever kill me. He was caught, imprisoned, and asked to drink poison. And when the poison was given to him, he laughed and said, "You have to catch me before you kill me." He said, "Catch you? We already caught you." They were not able to understand. He was absolutely fearless because he knew, you can only capture my body and you can kill my body. You can't touch me. You can do no harm to me. And therefore he was fearless. As his disciples were crying, he was just smiling and he said, "I'm not going to die." So many great thinkers and philosophers of their time have at least reached this conclusion. In some form or another, I will continue to exist. Nobody can destroy. They may destroy the body, not the soul. Now, this sounds a little exotic. The soul is Satchit Ananda. In the Vedic literature, the soul is described by three adjectives: Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Sat means eternal. In the Mahabharata, in the Vanaparva, when the Pandavas are in the forest, just they are about to finish their time in the forest and go to Virat Nagari to, you know, live in incognito. Yamaraj comes and tests them in the form of a yaksha and asks certain questions to Maharaj Yudhishthir. And one of the questions in the yaksha prashna is, what is the most amazing thing in the world? What is the most amazing thing? What is the most wonderful thing? And what do you think Yudhishthir Maharaj said? He didn't say hanging gardens of Babylonia, Great Wall of China, the seven wonder of the world. I don't know whether they existed at that time or not, 5,000 years ago. But what he says is very interesting. Very wonderful food for thought. He said, "Ahani ahani bhutani gachanti hi yamalayam sheshah sthavaram ichanti kim ascharyam atah param." What can be more wonderful than the fact that every day, every moment, all of us see that someone is dying and going. Pick up the newspaper. Someone died, obituary column and this and this, and or some accident or some this and somebody. People are dying day in and day out. You travel and sometimes you see so many deaths occurring. Everyone invariably feels, this is not going to come to me. I'm not going to die. At least we don't plan for it. Isn't it so wonderful? You see it all around, but you think, mujhe nahi hoga, I'm an exception. So that's the most wonderful thing. Why? Because the real fact is, you, the real you, are not going to die. It's the body that is born. It is the body that grows old. It is the body that gets diseased. It is the body that dies. The soul is neither born nor die. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuya. The soul is neither born nor does it die. It just comes into being and it just disappears. The body comes into being, grows, stays for some time, dwindles and dies. But the real self is eternal. That is the sat feature. Secondly, chit. Chit means actually we are all full of knowledge. Tell me, where does a newborn child get the knowledge to suck the breast of the mother? Where does the butterfly get the knowledge to just flap its wings and fly? Where is that inbuilt knowledge? It doesn't even open the mouth. Through reflex action, it knows how to. You may say reflex action. It's a neurological thing. Still, how is it done? Even for the reflex action to function in a particular way, where is that knowledge coming from? Who made that system? How is it some people remember brilliant geniuses? Naturally they pick up music. Naturally they pick up some talents. Inborn talents. Why everyone doesn't have? If everything is biological, everything is only material. No training, and naturally they have a propensity for some wonderful talent. Why one person has, other person doesn't have? It's amazing how we never think about these things and foolishly claim, life is only from the womb to the tomb. How foolish. So chit. Chit means knowledge is already there. Actually, that's why it is called self-realization. We don't say self-understanding, self-imposition. You don't have to stuff that knowledge. When you hear some knowledge, confirmation comes from within. Yeah, this is right. According to, of course, different kind of background that we come from, culture and samskaras. But the confirmation comes. So this is the proof that actually we are full of knowledge. It is only unfoldment of knowledge. Just like within the before the flower is bud, right? Within the bud is actually a blossom, fully blossomed flower. Similarly, within our heart, every knowledge is there. It must be a favorable environment must be created to unfold it. So all this system of knowledge, the software is inbuilt. As growth takes place, everything starts manifesting. And thirdly, ananda. How is it universally, cross-culturally, irrespective of which religion you belong to, everyone naturally looks for happiness? How many of you, frankly tell me, eagerly look forward to misery? I just want to be miserable. I love to be miserable. No one. We all want to avoid misery. We all want to be happy. Why? That is our natural, constitutional, inherent position. Even though the body is full of misery, the soul is always hankering. Nobody wants to die because we actually don't die. Everyone wants to be happy. We love to hear the stories, and they lived happily ever after. We know it doesn't exist. But the fact is, deep inside, the fact is, we want to live happily ever after. And that is possible. It's not a fairy tale. That's what the ultimate goal of life should be. To go back to the kingdom of God and live happily ever after. So inherently that knowledge is there. That is why we are seeking, even though we have not experienced it in this world. Now somebody may say, all right, thank you very much for giving this information. But please, can you tell me, where exactly is the soul? Here? Here? Or in the belly? Or on the knees? Ghutne mein dimag? Where? According to the scriptures, according to Upanishad, Esho Anuratma Chetasa Veditavyo Pranaischittam Sarvamotam Prajanam. pranaihi chittam. Chittam means within the heart. The soul is situated in the region of the heart. It's very interesting, right? When you want to address I, right? Naturally, we don't say I. We naturally say, I love you. Right? You say, I love you. You don't say, I love you. Maybe after some time, I don't know why I loved you. Naturally, the heart, the hands go to the, I love you. So, it's very intuitively, naturally, our, when we want to point to ourselves, we point to the heart. This is the chitta aspect. Somewhere intuitively we know, I've never seen anyone say, I love you or I love you. It's natural. But somebody say, what about the heart surgery? Heart transplant. Right? Somebody asked me when I last time I was speaking, he says, Swamiji, what about the heart transplant? I said, suppose you are sitting and someone says, thoda hat jao na, dusra kursi lagana. You get up. The chair is removed, another chair is put and you sit down. As simple as that. That's why it is written, the soul is situated in the region of the heart. It is not the heart. Heart is a physical place. But because the soul is in the heart is pumping. Do you ever charge your heart, put for charging at night? Like your mobiles? Pata nahi, raat ko agar ruk gaya to, for charging mein. It's amazing, from birth till your death, the heart is constantly beating. Where is the power? It's pumping, not just beating, it's pumping, purifying the blood. And wherever the blood goes, there is consciousness. It's also very interesting. Wherever blood flows, there is consciousness in the human body. It doesn't flow in the nails, it doesn't flow in the hair. Wherever through the nerves and through the blood vessels, wherever the blood flows, you feel the consciousness. The soul changes bodies. Dehi nosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatran muhyati. Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihaya. Just like if the cloth becomes very old, you throw it and accept a new cloth, new dress. Similarly, when this body becomes old and worn out, 1902 model, abhi utha to baithne nahi hota, kya laab hai ye gaadi ka, old model, dispose of and buy a 2014 model. So this is a vehicle. And the soul is the seated within this vehicle. When the vehicle becomes useless and worn out, it leaves it and takes another one. Not only that, the soul changes bodies even within this body. According to medical science, every 7 years, you don't have even one cell that is the same. Every cell keeps changing. That means if you are, say, 49-year-old, you have changed your body 7 times. Do you ever feel it? We feel we are the same. Why? Because we are not changed. We, the soul. Now you may say, oh, thank you so much. Now you have given us the whereabouts of the soul. Tomorrow, I am going to get a powerful microscope and zero in on the soul. And I want to see how I look. The real me. You must realize, it is so small. How small? The Upanishads describe. It says, Keshagra Shatabhagasya Shatadha Kalpitasya. Kalpana. Think about, what is the example? It says, pull out one hair from your body. and take the tip of the hair. Kesha agra. Agra means the tip. Kesha agra shatabhagasya. Cut the tip of the hair into 100 pieces. Then take one of them and cut it into another 100. Keshagra shatabhagasya shatadha kalpitasya cha. Just imagine. Not the hair, the tip of the hair. 100 into 100. 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. If you can imagine something of that size, that is the size of the soul. Can you imagine? It is that same soul which is making the elephant move. It is that same soul which is making this 50, 60, 70, 80 kilo body move. And if that 1/10,000th tip of the hair leaves the body, four people have to carry Ram, Nam, Satya. And they also get tired after some time. But if that same 1/10,000th tip of the hair is inside the body, you can jump around, jog and do a high jump and get Olympic gold for jumping 7 feet above the ground. Can you imagine the power of the soul? 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. And if it enters even an 83rd, or what to speak of an elephant, it's like so many, you know, hundreds of pounds and thousands of pounds. It's not that the elephant soul is this big and the mosquito soul is this. No. All the living entities, whether it is a microbe or a blue whale, which is the biggest one, at least so far known, according to modern science, 90 feet long, all of them have the same soul, 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Then we may say, good enough, we will get an electronic microscope. An electron microscope and zero in on it and see. Can you ever see the soul? The answer is, it is inconceivable. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate. Three words are used. Avyakta. Vyakta means manifest to the material eyes. And avyakta means it cannot be seen by the material eyes. Why? Because it is not matter. It is not made of matter that you can see, touch, taste or smell. It is actually a chit kana. It is a spiritual unit. Forget about soul. Even mind cannot be seen, even though it is matter, subtle matter. What to speak of seeing the soul? The soul is spiritual. It can be understood through your intelligence. It can't be perceived. Sometimes people say, no, some experiment was done. A man was about to die, was put in a thick glass case. And then when he died, the glass burst and went off. Not necessary. The soul can pass through a thick wall. The mind can go out of this wall. What to speak of the soul? An X-ray radiation goes via the body and comes out the other way. It can't penetrate the bone to some extent. What to speak of the mind and what to speak of the soul? This is our material conception, but it can easily and travel billions of miles in a second. Because it is spiritual. It has no material limitations. Now, what is the difference between matter and spirit? Actually, matter in and of itself is formless. But it is the spirit within which gives form to matter. Just like this cloth, our shirt and pant doesn't have a form. It has a particular form according to my size. Right? Similarly, the matter takes a form depending on the spirit inside. The spirit gives matter, form to the matter. Actually, it is said there are two types of bodies which covers the soul. The first covering of the soul is a subtle body, and the top covering of the soul is the gross body. The gross body is what we see of each other, and the gross body is consisting of five elements: Bhumi Rapo Nalo Vayu Kham Mano Buddhi Revacha Ahankara Iti Amme Bhinna Prakriti Rashtada. The Gita says that the gross body consists of five elements, Panchamaha Bhuta. First is the earth element. When you burn the body, what remains is some ash. The earth element goes to the earth element. Then there is water element. 70% of the body is water element. The blood, the plasma. We see a nice effulgence in the face because of the water element. Had it not been for the water element, you can't see the shine on the face. Then there is the fire element. You may say, fire in the body? Yes. It's called Jatharagni. Can you imagine? If the fire was not there in the body, you wouldn't be able to digest the food that you eat. That is why the temperature is 98.6 degree. If it cools down, it won't be so cool. See, it's like an oven. The body is like an oven. Perfect temperature. Then there is the air element. Vata. Kapha, vata and pitta. Kapha means the watery element. Vata means the air element. And pitta means the fire element. This is how Ayurveda deals with the diseases. Any imbalance of kapha, vata and pitta causes many kinds of diseases. Vata roga. You know, what do you call that term? Arthritis is vata roga. Just like, the door, sometimes they have this for movement, easy movement. And when it becomes loose, it just keeps flapping. So because of, there are different kinds of air. Five kinds of air. Prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana. Then there are five other kinds. 10 kinds of air are flowing. If the air doesn't flow properly, you can't even pass stool and urine. You know, but giving birth to the child, it is the air which pushes the child out. It is the air which pushes the excreta out of the body. It is the air which, there are outgoing air, upcoming air, downgoing air, balancing air, five different kinds of air in the body, perfectly moving, and therefore our movement is very smooth. If the air is disturbed, either it becomes stiffened or it becomes problematic, loose. It should be perfectly balanced. So that is the air element. And then there is the ether. Inter and intracellular space. The body is occupying some space that is called the ether element. So in this way, the gross body that we see of each other is composed of earth, water, fire, air and ether. And inside this is another body which is called as Sukshma Sharira, Sukshma Deha. And that consists of three elements: the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego, Mithya Ahankar. This is the subtle body. The mind has two functions: Sankalpa, Vikalpa. I like it, I don't like it. I love it, I hate it. So likes and dislikes are judged by the mind. Then there is the intelligence. It has a discrimination, viveka. Discrimination and determination. These are the functions of the intelligence. And then there is the false ego. And what is the false? That is subtlest of matter. Is the false ego. I am this body. So, the soul is connected to the gross body through the subtle body. Just like the engine is connected to all the bogies in a railway train, the engine is the mover, that is like the soul. And the bogies are like earth, water, fire, air, the whole body. And the link that collects them is the subtle body, the false ego. The soul is connected to the false ego, the ego is connected to the intelligence, intelligence to the mind to ether and air and fire and water and earth. So the soul moves, the whole body moves along with it. And if the soul is gone, engine goes away and detached, then everything is just lying there, dead. So what is ghostly existence? What is a ghost? A ghost is nothing but a soul without the gross body. Actually, when a person dies, only the gross body dies. The subtle body remains with the soul. And therefore, we remember the past lives. The remembrance is carried by the subtle body. Then you may ask, why everyone doesn't remember? Why can't everyone remember? That we will discuss tomorrow, when we discuss why do bad things happen to good people. Nobody wants to remember something bad, isn't it? You want to forget it. Actually, it is a curse if you remember all the bad things that happened to you. So the time of birth, it's such a shock that you forget everything of the past. But within the womb, the child remembers the past. But during the delivery, everything is forgotten. Everything is delivered behind, left behind. But some particular kind of karma, they remember. So, what is death? Death means the gross body dies and the soul leaves along with the subtle body to another gross body. And what is liberation? Permanent liberation. If you give up the subtle body also, then there is no need to take another gross body. The subtle body is the cause for getting another gross body. So before the gross body dies, that means before we die, if we finish off the subtle body, then just like if there is a coconut, if a coconut is connected to the shell, when it is raw, the pulp of the coconut can be compared to the soul and the shell to the body. When the coconut is raw, it is connected to the shell. When you break it, the coconut is still sticking to the shell. But when the coconut becomes ripe, you know, if you shake it, you can see khad 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 sound is coming. That means it is detached from the shell. Like, what do you call it? Copra. Then when you break the shell, the whole coconut comes out. So before the shell, this external shell drops, if you have finished the subtle body, then there is no need to take another birth. You go back to the spiritual world. So the purpose of human life is to purify our mind, intelligence, and kill and remove the false ego. The root cause of staying in this world is a false ego. Janasya mohoyam aham mameti. I, me and mine. The root cause of material existence. We will discuss that the day after tomorrow. How to remove this false ego. How to purify the mind. How to purify the intelligence. And how to purify these senses. In fact, that is the main purpose of human life. Tapo divyam putraka. Yena sattvam shuddhyet. You have to purify your existence by purifying the senses, purifying the mind, purifying the intelligence, and purifying the false ego. The moment you become pure, then you go back. Then you, that's the perfection of life. So the last day we will be discussing that. How to purify our existence. That is the perfection of yoga. Now, somebody may ask,
Is it possible that we can create a human being just like we get a photocopy done, Xerox? Is it possible that man can ever create another human being like we create a nut and a bolt or a screw in the factory? Is man just a powerful computer or robot that it can be again created? Maybe the machines are designed. They can be designed by men. But the humans have, or any living entity has consciousness that can't be created by matter. So it is impossible to create a living entity through matter. Life comes from life. Life cannot come from matter. You may say, "Arey, one egg is there, and from that, which is matter, and from there comes a chicken." Right? So, all right, if you think, but all the egg has come into existence because the soul is inside. If the soul would not be inside, the egg wouldn't hatch in the first place. What is the proof? You manufacture an egg, sit on it. You manufacture an egg in your company. Put all the ingredients, that all the chemicals are known. And you sit on it 21 days and hatch it. If at all a chicken comes out, we will throw Bhagavad Gita into the dustbin and we will become your disciple. If not, you throw all your nonsensical ideas and follow Bhagavad Gita. As simple as that. Matter cannot create life. Life has to come from life. Two living entities come together to give birth to another living entity. It cannot come from matter, from nowhere something comes. No, impossible. Now we'll take the question because the flow of thought will be disturbed. I'm sure I'm going to stop early today. I'm stopping in next few minutes. And 15 minutes will be dedicated to the question answers. And if you have time, I have 1 hour, no problem. Because yesterday's is also due. Many people had some questions. So I'll quickly run through today's. So, wow, I'm eternal, full of knowledge and blissful. That means, am I God? No one can kill me, I'm indestructible. I'm eternal, I'm full of knowledge. The fact is, we are not gods, but we are God apostrophe S. We belong to God. We are His part and parcel. Mamai vamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. The Gita says, Krishna says in the Gita to Arjuna, every living entity is my part and parcel. Just like the finger is a part of the body. The finger is a part of the body. Is it the body? Yes, it is the body. But is it the body? No, it is not the body. It is a part of the body, but not the body in and of itself. And if this finger wants to become happy, you can't put all your finger in halwa and say, you become happy. The finger has to take the food, put it into the belly. If food goes into the belly, he'll become happy. His children will become happy, his family will become happy, and the whole creation will become happy. So if every part of the body serves the whole, serves the Lord, which are the constituent, because they are all part and parcel of the body, and part and parcel of the Lord, by watering the root of the tree, which means if we can pick up the food and put it in the belly, we become happy, our family will become happy, the society will become happy, the whole world will become happy. So if every living entity starts serving God, service of God as his primary focus, naturally you become happy. Not the senses, may not be the mind, mind may be disturbed. The soul becomes happy. Just like the fish becomes happy as soon as it goes into the water. So living being can never become God. It can only become godly. When you connect with God, you become godly. You can never become God. God is God, we are we. So then, the next question is, within this body, there are two souls, the individual soul and the super soul. So every living entity has a soul. And next, just next to that, is the Paramatma, the Jivatma, the individual soul, and Paramatma. The soul is 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, and next to the soul is the Lord, expanded in the form of Paramatma. Just like the body is like a tree, and on which there are sitting two birds. One bird is the Jivatma, which is eating the fruits of the tree. Sometimes it is sweet and it enjoys, sometimes it is bitter and it suffers. But there is another living entity, another soul, that is the Paramatma, the Lord, who is just a silent witness. He gives the knowledge, he gives the remembrance, he can make you forget. He is just a silent witness. We are cognizant of only our body. I don't know what's happening in your body. But I know if there is some pain going on, I know what's in my body. But God, because in his form as Paramatma is present in every living entity, he is everywhere. And therefore, the soul is a living, a loving servant. And the Lord is eternally a loving master. So the day we start serving the Lord, which is our natural constitutional position, we become happy. This is the secret of happiness. So we are one in quality with God, but different in quantity. Our salvation depends on the acceptance of this reality. Could you just have the lights off? I'll just quickly run through a slideshow. Now somebody may say, all right, thank you very much. I think I have become self-realized. Because now I know I'm not the body, I'm the soul. Eternal, full of knowledge and blissful. So the question is, just by theoretical understanding of who I am, can I actually become self-realized? One time, a group of birds went to a sadhu. And they said, please, give us the secret to become happy. And the sadhu said, I'm going to give you a mantra. Just chant this mantra, understand it and follow it, and you'll become happy. And what is that? He said, Shikari aayega, jaal bichhayega, dana dalega, lob se usme fasna nahi. The hunter will come, lay his net and put some grains. Out of greed, don't get caught. Come on, repeat. And all the birds started repeating. Shikari aayega, jaal bichhayega, dana dalega, lo. Shikari aayega, jaal bichhayega. He said, yes, chant this mantra and be happy. And all the birds started flying in the air. Shikari aayega, jaal bichhayega. And as they were flying above the forest, they saw so many grains lying there. And all of them swooped and started eating the grains. But then when they tried to fly, unfortunately, they realized they were all caught in the net. In the evening, the hunter came, released the net, caught all the birds inside the net, and started walking home. And inside the net, all the birds were chanting, Shikari aayega, jaal bichhayega, dana dalega, lob se usme fasna nahi. What is the lesson? We all will be like the birds, foolish birds, if we just say, I am not the body, I am the soul. I am not the body, I am the soul. So what about it? If you are not the body, we are the soul. What are we doing to the soul? The soul is thirsty. The soul is hungry. The soul is dissatisfied. We are supplying food to the body, quenching its thirst and hunger of the body. We We are satisfying the body, but are we satisfying the need of the soul? Therefore, it's very important that we should understand the need of the soul. And what is the need of the soul? The soul is spiritual. It needs spiritual food. And what is that food? That food will be discovered at the end of this slideshow. So yes, there are so many thinkers who have given thought to this identity of the body. But we have seen, when a person dies, who is it who has died? Common sense says that person has passed away. That means he is no more in the body. He has left. This is the out-of-body experience that I was telling, near-death experience. And another proof of existence of the soul is past life memory. There's so many instances. This is one lady, this is one girl. Her name was Shukla. And earlier she was this lady. And later she became this. And when she was 2.5 years old, she started speaking, "I want to meet my daughter." Can you imagine 2.5 years old dog telling, "I want to meet my daughter, Mana." And then they took her to the address that she gave, which was 128 kilometers away from her house, into a new area which she has never gone. But she identified her husband, told exactly what was his favorable item that he liked. So much so that all the family people were convinced that this girl is none other than the same lady who has come in another physical body. So this is the lady whom I met, Mrs. Satwant Pasricha. She is the associate professor of psychology at the National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences, NIMHANS. And she has studied over 350 cases. So these are some of the cases. This girl, this lady in the red sari, her name is Manju. When she was 2, she realized, she claimed to be a reincarnation of Krishna. Krishna means not the Supreme Lord. Her earlier name was Krishna. And she narrated how she had drowned in the village well. She spends time with her mother in the previous birth. This is the previous birth mother. And the one from this life. And both are convinced that this is my mother and this is my daughter from the next life. 25 years ago, Maifuli, this lady, was walking past in the marketplace when 3-year-old Raghunath, who was Ahmad reborn, shouted, "There goes my wife." So this man, 25 years ago, when he was 6-year-old, he saw this lady and said immediately that she is my wife. And he gave so many details, intimate details to this lady, that this lady is convinced that this person is none other than my husband, who is reborn. Now this is Mahender, this blue shirt, this boy. He remembers himself as Ogad Ram, killed in an accident. He traveled to Ogad's village and took sweets for his 3 children, seen with Ogad's mother, this person's earlier mother, and this is current father of this person. Can you imagine? These are his children. I mean, this is not any... this was confirmed by scientists, the kind of details that he has given at this age. This girl, another girl, sitting on her ex-husband's lap. And already she's garlanded, if you see here. And this whole family is convinced that this girl is none other than his wife, who's actually, at this age, she has revealed so much of detail, which has convinced this family that this girl is none other than the same lady. So Krishna says in the Gita, "Dehinosmin yatha dehe." You know, within this body itself, we pass from birth to old age, you know, to youth, to old age, and eventually die to enter another body. So we were all young. This is a couple before the Second World War. It was a very big cameraman, what do you call it, a very photographer, and later they got married, and this is their current status. So the body has changed. Every 7 years it changes. We give up the old model and take a new model and come in. We go out one door called death and come out through another called birth. And as we were discussing, we cannot manufacture human beings like we do the robots. Because actually, a robot can see and give an information that I am seeing red light, but it has no experience, there is no consciousness. A robot can be trained to tell, as soon as you open the door, the robot can tell you, I love you. The coffee is on the table. But it has no feeling, consciousness. So Thomas Huxley, a great thinker, said, there is a third thing in the universe, to wit, consciousness, which I cannot see to be matter or force. Scientists want to explain all the phenomena of this world just by a combination of matter and force. But they fail to understand there is a third thing, and that is consciousness, which is the symptom of the soul. This we will discuss tomorrow, how there are 84 lakh species. You know, Jalaja Navalakshani Sthavara Lakshmimshati. Of the 84 lakh species of life, 9 lakh are Jalaja, born in the water. Sthavara Laksha Vimshati, plants, etc. are 20 lakhs. Kramayo Rudra Sankhyayam, insects are of 11 lakhs. Pakshinam Dashalakshava, 10 lakh species of birds. Trimshal Lakshani Pashava, 30 lakhs of animals. And Chatur Lakshani Manava, 4 lakh species, which is basically based on consciousness. Not all Homo sapiens are one category. They are classified according to level of development of consciousness. And as we were telling, the body can be compared to a tree, and it has one soul, which is the enjoyer of the fruits, that is the Jivatma, ourselves. And within every tree, there is also the Lord seated as Paramatma, who is just a witness of the happiness and distress. And he will guide only when we turn to him. Otherwise, he just remains a witness. Now we will come to the main point. All right, we have come to know that we are not the body, we are the soul. But merely feeding the body, nourishing the body, decorating the body, without addressing the need of the soul, is like a fish which is out of water. Pull it out of water and try to give it all kinds of foodstuff and dollars and all kinds of things. It can never be happy. Similarly, as long as our soul is not nourished, we will not be happy, in spite of the fact that the body may be in a very opulent condition of life. We may be billionaires, but if the soul is not satisfied, we will not be. Trying to merely feed the body and starve the soul is like a lady who put a parrot in the cage. She was polishing the cage, but she forgot to feed the bird. Similarly, if we are simply polishing our cage, the body, but neglect the need of the soul, then we become unhappy. Can we put on the lights? What is the food for the soul? The food for the soul is, because the soul is spiritual, the food is also spiritual. And that is the name of the Lord, who is absolute. The Lord being absolute, his name is also non-different from him. And therefore, by chanting the name of the Lord, which is the process, the easiest, sweetest and most simple process for self-realization, one can actually acquire true happiness. We'll conclude here. We can take a few questions. We have 10 minutes to go. Yes, can we pass the mic here? She's been wanting to ask for a long time. She's been... astral body travel through certain, like Shankaracharya was supposed to be such a person. He was challenged. He was a sannyasi. He was a renunciate right from day one. He had never got married. And one time he had to argue in a debate with a lady who said, "You have no experience in this particular field." So he left the body, entered a king's body who was just then died, and after a month came back and replied to her question, and she was satisfied. So a person leaves the body, enters into another physical body, then comes back. Of course, that was done. Here, he leaves the body, goes to another place and comes back. There are some two German scientists who have experimentally done this. Where, say for example, I leave my body and I come to your house. I've never seen you. I've never met you. I come to your house and come back into my body and tell you, I went to your house, on your table, these are the things that are kept, on the board there is written, and this door has this particular kind of lock.
So how does the soul perceive? It doesn't have any sense
organs. The other way around. The body can't see, a dead body can't see. Actually, it is the soul who sees through the eyes. It is the soul who hears through the ears. It is the soul who speaks through the mouth. Just like the car has a windshield. The windshield doesn't see. It is the driver who sees through the windshield. Similarly, because the soul has eyes, we are able to see through the eyes. If the soul had no eyes, the eyes would be useless. The material eyes are actually dead chemicals, that's all. But it is the soul which gives life and sees through that. Is that clear? Any other questions? Yeah, please. Can you please take the mic, because we want everyone to hear the question too. किन चीज के बारे में? बाकी युगों की. ओके, एक्चुअली इट इज डिस्क्राइब्ड इन द सतयुग. इट स्टार्ट्स विद 100% रिलीजियोसिटी एंड बाय द एंड ऑफ सतयुग इट हैज कम डाउन टू 75%. And Treta Yuga starts with 75%, it comes down to 50%. Dwapar Yuga starts with 50%, comes down to 25%. Kali Yuga starts with 25%, ends with zero. Then everything has to be, overhauling has to be done, and you know, Sambhavami Yuga, the Lord has to come. And when the Lord comes as Kalki, the last avatar is Kalki avatar. And he is not going to speak Bhagavad Gita. He will come with a sword. He will only talk one language. No paritranay sadhunam. Koi sadhu rahega hi nahi. Only vinashaya sadhushkratam. And then of course, the Satyuga will begin again. The cycle will begin again. So it's basically, it's called Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age and Iron Age. Kali is like the Iron Age. It is the lowest. As I said, tatascha anudinam dharmaha satyam shaucham. That's described. Yeah. Can you pass the mic behind?
My question is, I have heard that unless you exhaust all karmas and samskaras, where you get depleted. So what's the connect of karmas and samskaras with the subtle body?
What is the
connect between karmas, samskaras, with the subtle body of the soul?
That is a discussion for tomorrow. Why do bad things happen to good people, or vice versa? So tomorrow we'll be discussing the basically five topics. We have discussed two topics so far. There are five topics in the Gita: Ishvara, the science of God; Jiva, the science of soul. And tomorrow we'll be discussing three topics. Prakriti, the nature of this world, Kala, the time factor, and Karma, the law that governs the activities that we perform. So tomorrow we'll be discussing this, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. So maybe you can take, yeah, can you? And anyone who understands these five topics, most of the questions will be resolved. So hopefully by end of tomorrow, substantially some amounts will be, some new questions may come up, of course, but most of these issues will be addressed. Yeah. That is the beginning of tomorrow's class. Somebody asked me yesterday the same thing. You asked me, right? Somebody there. Why did he make this? Dunya banane wale. Kya tere man mein samayi, kahe ka dunya banayi? We'll discuss that tomorrow. Actually, God didn't want to create this world. We were all in the spiritual world. We forced God to create this world. The government doesn't want to create a prison house. When people break the law, the government is forced to create a prison house. This is just a sample for you. What's going to come tomorrow? This is a trailer for the movie tomorrow. Oh, no. You are always existing. You are eternal. There was never a time that you did not exist, nor in the future shall you ever cease to be. Bhagavad Gita 2.11. We were there, but not in the form that we see today of each other. There was never a time. The soul, never was there a time when the soul did not exist. So then you say, what do you mean God created them? It is in this material world of dualities, everything has a beginning and an end. Therefore, we have to use the word create. But there was never a time that we did not exist. And there will never be a time when we will not exist. God means all his parts and parcels. Just like when you say king, it is understood that king means he has a kingdom, he has a queen, he has commander-in-chief, and he has a kingdom, and he has army. Otherwise, kya naam ka raja? Raja means all these things. Similarly, God means with his energy. When you say sun, it's not that one day sun, suddenly light started coming out. No. Sun means sun along with the sun rays. Similarly, God means along with his parts and parcels. We will discuss that tomorrow. And how we actually came here. Yeah. हाँ वो कल थोड़ा विस्तृत से चर्चा करेंगे. ऊर्ध्वम गच्छन्ति सत्वस्था मध्ये तिष्ठन्ति राजसा जघन्य गुणवृत्तिस्था अधो गच्छन्ति तामसा. जैसे 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 हमारे संस्कार होते हैं ऐसी योनि में हम जन्म लेते हैं. जो सत्वगुणी है वो एक देव योनि में जन्म लेता है, जो रजोगुणी है वो मनुष्य योनि में, और जो तमोगुणी है वो पशु योनि में जाता है. तो हमारे कर्म जो हैं वो निर्धार करते हैं कि किस प्रकार के शरीर में हम प्रवेश करें. व्हाट काइंड ऑफ ए बॉडी विल टेक डिपेंड्स अपॉन व्हाट इज जस्ट लाइक व्हाट एवर यू हैव इन्वेस्ट, व्हाट एवर मनी यू गिव दैट काइंड ऑफ ए फ्लैट यू गेट. अ फ्लैट विथ यू नो 4 bedroom एंड अटैच बाथरूम टॉयलेट एंड एक्स्ट्रा वेरेंडा एंड बालकनी, or One bedroom, come kitchen, come toilet, everything. It depends upon how much you can afford. And the affording thing is the karma, which we'll discuss tomorrow. A good karma gives Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Shribhir. Four things. If somebody is born in a very well-to-do family, very rich family, highly learned, brilliant intelligence, and physical beauty, you must know this is because of good karma. And just the opposite of that, in a low family, with this kind of, it is actually misuse of the previous facility. Suppose I give my child some money, but if he misuses it, I take away that money, I give him very little money. But if he uses it properly, I give him more facility. The father does to the child. When he sees that he is utilizing it nicely, what is given to him. So when you misuse, then you are given limited facility. The lower species means limited facility. And a higher species means more facility, more independence, more opportunities to utilize. Like that. Is that clear? You don't seem to be very satisfied. Okay. Yeah, I got you. Actually, all these attributes are part of the soul. Because soul by nature, being a part of God, is godly by nature. And we will discuss tomorrow when we discuss the three modes of nature. Sattva, Raja and Tamoguna. That is actually the covering. Just like, suppose you take a tube light, white in color, right? But if you put a blue paper, thin paper, then it becomes blue light. If you put a yellow paper, it becomes a yellow light. Put a red paper, it becomes red light. The light is neither red nor blue nor yellow. The light is pure white. Depending on the covering, the light that comes out seems to be blue. Similarly, to the extent the soul is covered, the lower modes manifest. Perverted qualities. Perverted. The qualities are there, but it's perverted. When, say for example, compassion. When compassion manifests in its pure state, you want to find happiness in magnanimously distributing. But when the same is covered, then it manifests as selfishness, to grab and to greed. To acquire more and more. So it is the same quality, but in its pure state, it's very godly, and in its covered state, it is perverted. So, why different people have different kinds of qualities? Depending on the, we'll discuss that tomorrow, karma and all that, the kind of samskaras of the past, the samskaras of the parents, a particular kind of a soul is attracted into the womb of the mother. And right from there are two things, nature versus nurture, right? Just like, suppose a seed, you may have the best apple seed from Kashmir, and you put it in your garden, but don't give sunlight and keep on cutting the root, it becomes a bonsai plant, right? But that's not its nature. So nature was good. But if the nurture was not there, samskaras were not there, then its growth is stunted. So one is what kind of background you come with, what you already acquired, and then the facility around. So both are important. The surrounding, of course, the surrounding is also determined by what kind of a facility we get according to what we deserve from the past. So, could we discuss what we discussed today? Because you are jumping into tomorrow's subject matter. And yeah, can we pass the mic behind? Yes, sir. I would prefer that the discussion be on what we have discussed today. Well, there are so many quotes like that, Hum Janam Janam Ke Saathi. But the fact is this, a human being, the life of a human being is like a junction. Human being is like a junction. In a junction, you have an opportunity to go up, go down, or remain where you are. In the lower species, there is no choice. In the lower species, there is only one thing. You just go up. It's like an elevator. If you misuse, you go down, and after that, there is only one direction, only up. Different species, you just go. And then that's why it is human life is considered rare and so precious and so valuable. Because in this eternal change of species, this 100 years goes away like that. You know, within no time, 100 years go away. But within this 100 years, you can completely, from this vicious cycle, you can actually find a loophole and just get out of this vicious cycle. Absolutely. 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 Oh, no. Man can become an animal, animal can become a man can become a woman can become a man. Oh, because these are all bodies. And the soul is just transferring. Yes. There is, in the scripture, in the Bhagavatam, there are references. Maharaj Bharat, from a king, he became a deer. The experience is there. And there is also so many evidences of a man turning into a woman and a woman turning into a man. Depending on the kind of desires and what we deserve, we can actually get a particular body. It can go up and down and change also. Yeah. We'll discuss that tomorrow, but I'll just tell you, there are two types. There are instant karma and delayed karma. So the karma keeps manifesting. Every action is like a seed, and its reaction is like the fruit. So one life is like a handful of our karma. In that, if there are some very good kind of activity we have done, the result may be very good. If it is bad, it may be very bad. It's amazing thing is the combination of both can be there. So for some duration, you're supposed to be in a very good situation and position. And then there is a complete downfall and something else. And then it can go up like that. So it's not that, it's just one thing. It just keeps varying. And this is, lot of karmas. Not only that, simultaneously you are creating. We will discuss that tomorrow actually. We have jumped 24 hours ahead, and therefore a lot of tomorrow, hopefully at the end of the day, this discussion, most of this questions will be answered. Yeah, please. Yeah. Thank you for giving a proof. Actually, what you're saying is exact. These two German brothers, this article had come about astral body. I included it recently. This is two German brothers. What you're saying is not that they actually left, you know, that soul living, because the soul living is, you know, like dying. But it is the person going there and coming back and giving the information which proves that actually you have gone. Yeah, true. Thank you. Yeah.
The question which I had was pertinent to today, and it is this, that if soul is supposed to be eternal and it's a provider for the external body, why does it happen that anytime during the gravest of accidents, the soul just leaves the body? And why don't we have cases where in the gravest of accidents, say for example, a flight
actually death is one thing. When the soul, there are two things. One is the karma is exhausted in that particular body. Another one is, physically speaking, on a material level, when the body is big, you know, like can't be resided anymore, then the soul leaves. And another thing is, when the karma is exhausted, at that time, like for example, I have paid some amount to get into a flat, and as soon as that time is exhausted, you are actually out. So staying in a particular physical frame is according to the kind of karma we have done. We are given in lease, so to say, a particular body for a particular amount of time, and as soon as that is over, it is just an whether the means happens to be an accident or a snake bite or falling into the well or whatever, or a heart attack, that is only a different some excuse, so to say, whatever. But the fact is, as soon as that karma gets exhausted, it may seem accident to us because we don't see the whole thing, so therefore we see, oh, all of a sudden he left. But the fact is, as soon as the karma exhausts in that frame, particular physical frame, then that soul leaves. Actually, is forced to leave from that. So sometimes we see a person is sitting straight, and you know, I one time in Bangalore, we were driving, in the next vehicle, they stopped at the signal, and that person laid his head on the steering wheel, and he left his body there. And we moved, and then people gathered, and then they found out he had died on the steering wheel straight away. So that's like, this is from a spiritual perspective we see. Materially, causes may be there. Whether, you know, heart attack or this or accident and concussion or whatever. But spiritually we see that as soon as that duration is exhausted, that person leaves.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What to speak of that? Sometimes the child dies within the womb. Right? Stillborn child. So, again, that kind of a karma, particular kind of a karma, actually to remain within the womb is also very intense for the child. And then it leaves even before it's born. So that period is clearly fixed in terms of the karma. Thank you. Yeah. I heard some Akashvani. I didn't know where it was coming from. God and
demigods,
yeah, yeah.
Then what was one question is, when the Supreme Lord has created this universe, why he has created this different religion and the interaction between the religion? Why people are fighting against one another in the name of religion?
He didn't create it, we have created.
Why we have created the conflict?
It is because of ignorance, basically. There is only one God, there is only one religion. And what is that religion? In fact, the word religion means religio or religare, which means to reunite. That is yoga. Yoga means to reunite. And the only way of reuniting in a most intimate form is love. All the scriptures agree with this one point. The goal of life is to develop love. And love manifests. Faith is the symptom of love and surrender is its manifestation. And the different scriptures, as we discussed yesterday, different scriptures are nothing but the same truths revealed to different extents according to the capacity of the audience. It is revealed only so much. Just like, as I said, to a child, a surgeon may say, what happens when you take food? It goes in, beta, and then your energy is gone and the rest of the thing is disposed. Very simple. But that's the essence. And to another surgeon, he may explain full detail, very technical detail. But the essence remains the same. And if it is not, there are chala dharma, there is real dharma, and then there is kuta dharma, like that. Dharma also, it can be perverted and presented. During the time of Mahabharata, it is described in the Mahabharata, most of the kings were actually demoniac. In the beginning, Adiparva, there is one chapter called Sambhava Parva. It says, which demon came as which king? Practically, they were demoniac. Demoniac meaning totally. They were showing themselves to be very pious and religious, but they were totally against Jarasan. Highly religious person, charitable, but absolutely no faith in God. He was actually a demon. In the name of dharma, he was doing adharma. And systematically the Lord annihilated all of these. And he used Kurukshetra battle as a wonderful operating table to bring everyone together and did the job using one to destroy the other. So essence is one. Wherever it is revealed the maximum, wherever you are inspired to love God the maximum, adopt it, move ahead like that. Oh, I think we'll stop here. It is, I am available. No, I am available. I can. Okay, one last question. You are right. Tomorrow, Tomorrow there is one particular phrase which addresses this called individual and collective karma. Collective karma. We'll discuss that then. Please remind me about this. Individual karma versus collective. That means all people having a similar karma and put in a particular place and the karma machine is chalu, you know, started off. Sometimes the whole train collides. Sometimes the plane crashes. Somebody who was supposed to miss the flight got into it, and the fellow who got it, he missed out, and then he says, "Acha ho gaya, I was not in that flight." That's called as collective karma. So we'll discuss that tomorrow.